Merry Christmas, everyone. A little snow this evening. It's idyllic. It's cold. It's just how Christmas ought to be on postcards here in Wisconsin and movies and on the Hallmark Channel, right? This is here it all is, you know. We'll get back to that in a second, but it's a lovely evening to be sure, and great to have you here. My name is Father Nathan. I'm pastor here at Cabrini and also at St. Mary's on the north end of town, and send you Christmas greetings on behalf of Deacon Mike Cable, Deacon Ron Schneider, Father Justin, the associate pastor, our staff. Greetings from our parish to anybody visiting here. God willing, in about maybe 6 or 7 weeks or so, I will be in the Holy Land with 53 other pilgrims traveling to the place where this beautiful gospel from tonight takes place, to Bethlehem of Judea. And if you go there, where we're going to be going, hopefully again, very, very soon, those of us traveling there, you go to Bethlehem and you find the Church of the Nativity, Manger Square, Nativity Church, and it is a very old building. It's been there for a long time. And when you go there, you realize certain things about it. First of all, it's built over the top of the cave, the grotto it's called, where the Savior was born, little cave in the ground. And when you go down there, it's elaborate on the inside, but it really is still just, it's a cave. And you can see over the years, they built all this stuff on top of it, you know. So there's the spot where he was born, right there on the ground. You can place your hand right on the rock. There's a silver star that surrounds it with 14 points, 14 for the Davidic generations in Matthew's genealogy. Then there's the cave. Then there's the main church. Then they added on some more wings and some other things. Then a side chapel here and this thing over there. And then, you know, extra roofs on top and layers on the floor and altars here. And before long, they kind of built all this around this very simple spot. Time passes, and the sad fact is that the church is kind of rickety, you might say. It's not kept up very well. Reason being, because there's a shared jurisdiction of the property between the different Christian communities, Catholics, the Orthodox, and we don't agree on, unfortunately, how to take care of it, so it just kind of falls further and further into ruin. And so the result is that this lovely place is kind of fragile. There's all this stuff kind of built over top of this one little piece of rock, and it's kind of all barely held together these days. It's safe. You can walk around inside, right? But the point is, it could probably use a bit of work, you know? That's the Church of the Nativity that we'll be going to very, very soon. I mention this because I think the church itself, as I describe it, is probably not a bad image or metaphor for what Christmas has become in so many ways, especially here in our very secular and increasingly secular Western culture. There is the kernel. There is the truth of Christ's birth at the core of the entire thing called Christmas. Just like back in that church in Bethlehem, there's the actual spot. It's right there. And then as time has passed, we've built all this stuff around it. And it's amazing the kind of weight that Christmas has to bear these days. You might say it's laboring under the strain of it. Just think about it for a second. I mean, Christmas is not just a day anymore. It's the intersection of a commercial industry, of Santa Claus and presents, of the perfect house, the perfect snowfall, the Hallmark Channel, of Christmas carols, childhood memories, all these sentiments, cookies baked, decorations put up, lights everywhere, Christmas carols. There's all of that. Then there's the idea, I think, in our minds that it has to be this kind of emotionally perfect thing. And if it isn't, it gets really upsetting. Because the fact is, life is not the blessed Hallmark Channel. We're all hooked on it because, well, it's not really reality, is it? People die. This Christmas, there's probably a person, or I suppose I put it this way, there's an empty chair around your table that wasn't empty a year before. People get sick. Things happen. People lose jobs. That's why this time of the year is so hard on people, because it's trying to bear all this pressure to live up to its absolutely perfect cultural standard. All the emotion, all the sentiment, all the perfection, all the externals. And so if they're not there, if somehow we find today less than adequate, we just get annoyed. And even worse, we can't voice it because then we're some kind of a Scrooge, right? So can't have that. So bottled up it gets. And then as you read news stories, you realize that this time of the year is no longer this joyful thing. It's like a frustration for so many anxiety-ridden, sad, and upset people. I'm not trying to depress you, but the fact is, you know that this is really, really true. It's like that church building. It's gotten a bit rickety, you might say, because we've piled all this stuff on top of the simple, powerful, but simple truth of the incarnation. And it's been piled on in such a way that I think we have actually forgotten about what's actually at the core. And when that happens, all the externals take over. And pretty soon they lose their meaning and orientation. You forget that underneath all the layers of Christmas, as we've come to know it in every sector of the West, underneath all that is this forgotten little thing called the child and his place of birth, which is still very, very real. This is the danger of the holiday these days. I think you might agree. What does one do with all of that exactly? It's not a small problem. Maybe I can offer this evening two ways that we can use to or utilize or engage to get back down to the core of what Christmas is all about, no? And not let ourselves be so taken with all the externals that can oftentimes place such an emotional burden on us that things aren't just exactly perfect. And indeed, they frankly really are in life. One thing we actually could find by taking a look at the same church I talked about before, the one in Bethlehem. One way is humility. Humility brings us back to the core of what Christmas is all about. The preferred way for pilgrims going to Bethlehem to enter the famous church of the Nativity is through what's called the Doorway of Humility. The Doorway of Humility. The reason why it's called that is because it's about this tall on me. Okay? And to get in, you have to go down like this to cross into the church and then stand back up. So the idea being you humble yourself to come into the place where the humble Savior was born. Lest you think this is amazing piety, the story behind the door, side note for a second, is that in the 6th century, the Persians kept riding the horses in and out of the church because they didn't know what it was. So the Christians bricked up the door so they couldn't get in. Clever. Anyway, it survives to this day as the way to come in and be humble before the Lord, right? The point is, and this is how the truth of the door really does come to be in all of its beauty, there is no grasping the kernel of that building unless a person first has to shed their expectations about it when they come into the place. That's what bowing down means, being humble before the one who is humble before us. Translating that into our own day and age, right? It's probably good for us to take an honest, healthy look at how we view Christmas and think to ourselves, is there anything that I have to get rid of or toss off to make this once again an authentically Catholic Christian holiday that it really always has been and must be? Yes, all that gets tacked onto it is okay, but it cannot be what drives me all the time. If I'm all about the cookies or all about just the right gift, we're all about the Hallmark Channel kind of postcard image of the day, if that's all that drives me, and if you're here tonight, probably that's not what's driving you, but there are those for whom this is the case. If that's all that is, then that's kind of got to go, or it needs to be balanced by the core of the truth that God is born. God is born. That's a remarkably astounding reality. He is born. That's the reason we haven't got all this stuff. Today, he's born. And the fact is, if it all fell away, the cookies are burnt, the Hallmark Channel went out of business, which would be fascinating, but let's just track with me for a second. It didn't snow hard for me, but you would like that probably. If it all went away, he'd still be born. If the whole blessed church in Bethlehem fell down tomorrow, that's still where he was born. It would still be his birthplace. That rock would still be there, right in the heart of all the rubble that would be left. And it could be rebuilt again in some new form. All of this could get rebuilt in some new form around the kernel of the fact that he is born. That's what really matters. So when that drives it, and not the reverse, it's a joyful, grateful, beautiful festival, no matter what's going on in life. Yes, we lose people along the way. Yes, changes come and go. Our health comes and goes. Whatever. But when that's somewhat secondary to the birth of the child, we can handle it. because we know God is among us. He enters into all the mess of the human condition, and he blesses it, and he loves it in his own beautiful way. That's why the church is so fascinating. In all of its rickety kind of form, it is humanity, and Christ blesses it as a child blesses it on his birth. So humility is key, I think, if we're going to make sure that Christmas does not become just some shell of externals, but still really is the powerful truth that God is among us. Emmanuel, he's with us in the flesh. Nothing can take that away. No matter what happens, that's the core. We must hang on to that at all costs, no? And humility, bowing down, realizing a sense of perspective about it all, that's what brings us back to the one who is born for us. There's that. The second thing I would suggest, to kind of clear away the things that might not be so essential, let's say, to the holiday, would be this. It is the important and crucial role of silence. We need silence to get down to the core. If we were to go back in time to Bethlehem, we'd notice lots of things different about then and now, it's true. Today it's a very bustling, busy place, Bethlehem. It's a city. There's, you know, ATMs there and, you know, coffee bars and all that stuff. So, I mean, great. That wouldn't have been back to 2,000 years ago. But the key difference that I think we'd see right away is that it was so quiet. It was so, so silent. The world was silent back then. It's fascinating to me. About a week ago, they were doing some work here on the campus, and they had to turn the power off in this building for like 4 hours. We all went home, because what do you do these days without electricity, right, except twiddle your thumbs and think about something else, I guess. So away we all went, but typical nerd that I am, I stayed here to work on something. And it's so quiet. The refrigerators weren't running. The copier wasn't running. Nothing was on. It was dead, dead quiet. Not one machine was working on the block. It was awesome. My phone didn't work either. It was awesome. Back in Bethlehem, back in the day, no cars passing by, no sirens, no alarms, no machines running in the background. We don't know what silence is like anymore. And to the point where when it actually happens, it terrifies us. We start looking for something to do. Turn something on, put a screen in front of me, put on some music, anything just to drown out the deafening silence that's enveloping me. We just can't handle it in our very busy modern world. Not so back in Bethlehem. Not so back then, period. The world was just quieter back then. Imagine that. A quiet, quiet scene where a child is born and life kind of goes on its own merry way. I say this because, and I'm not the only one who says this these days, there are others in the church who say the same thing. If we don't make time for silence on a regular basis, we do not hear God. We don't hear him. He can't take on flesh and be born anew. We can't get down to the kernel if we're all caught up in the clutter. If there's always a screen in front of us, some noise in our ear, if we can't sit in the quiet of our hearts, we will not hear God. It is not possible. It is no accident that so much of the modern world is becoming less and less interested in God and more interested in things and devices and noises and alarms and screens and games and images and the visual world, the virtual world. All of it pushes God right to the side. He can't compete with that. So we can't pray unless it's quiet. We can't think unless it's quiet. We can't hear him unless it's quiet. We cannot have our hearts be healed unless it is quiet, because only he can heal them. Instead, we drown it out with distractions, and we don't really ever get healed, do we? So if we're going to be able to hang on to what Christmas really means and let God be born, we must be humble and know what it means to shed the externals, and we must be quiet and let him speak. Speak his word, speak his gospel, and speak it in our quiet, quiet hearts. Only in that way are we going to be able to understand what Christmas really means. And not just one day, but all during the year, every year. That's what God desires for us. So my charge for me and for you, this is hard for me too, so don't get me wrong here, this is hard. We have to make time for quiet. And we have to learn to love the silence. And when it first happens to us, it might not sit very well. It's like going through withdrawal. That's really what happens. But after a couple of days, or after a little bit of time, we begin to realize just how beautiful it actually is, and how soothing God's voice, gentle voice, actually is in our quiet ears. It will bear tremendous fruit if we just give it a chance and push everything else to the side. Without that, there can be no Christmas that endures. It's just the externals and the bells and whistles and the shopping and this and that and whatever else. No. What you want for Christmas is quiet. Quiet. When you sing Silent Night, you really do want a silent night. That's the point of that song. So I think, long story short here, right? The Lord desires to be born more than anything else in the world. And for that to happen, he wants us to be able to go, like, I will go to Bethlehem soon and get through all of the big building and get down to the place where I can put my hand right on the rock and say, this is the spot. This is what the whole thing really means. Right here, I will touch it, the rock, with my hand. Christmas is the same idea. He wants us to get past all the externals and get down and say, and have our hearts rest on the fact that he is born. This is what it means. If we can keep ourselves in touch with that reality, we'll weather everything else in life. The faith gets handed on. The word becomes flesh. He's born in our hearts. And the civilization that we live in still maintains its Christian identity. If we can't get down to that, well, then all just kind of falls in like an old rickety church. And we don't want that, do we? In humility, in quiet, in silence, in that beautiful space that only God can fill with his own voice, let us welcome the Savior, the quiet, gentle, simple, subtle, child Savior. Let us welcome him in humility and in silence. And as we do, Christmas will be radiant, our faith will be strengthened, and he'll be born again and again in our hearts for a world that really does need to hear him.